Meta Practice V1. Chapter 4. What the Science Shows. Chapter 4. What the Science Shows. For most of human history, the case for loving-kindness practice was made by saints, monks, scriptures, and the people who knew them. The testimony was consistent across thousands of years and dozens of cultures. It just couldn't be tested. In the last 20 years, that has changed. Loving-kindness meditation, LKM, and the closely related family of compassion meditations have become some of the most carefully studied contemplative interventions in the scientific literature. The evidence is not perfect, and contested findings are flagged as they come up. But the broad picture is now reasonably clear. Practicing metta, even briefly, even for novices, measurably changes how people feel, how they treat each other, how their bodies respond to stress, and how their brains are wired. What follows is a tour of the evidence, grounded in citable studies with full references at the end of the book. The point is not to dazzle anyone with science. The point is to confirm that the practice does what the older traditions said it does, and that you can begin tomorrow morning with reasonable confidence that you are not wasting your time. Loving kindness is a distinct intervention. Until quite recently, contemplative research in the West focused mostly on mindfulness, present moment attention, often without explicit emotional content. Loving kindness meditation is different. It deliberately cultivates a warm, friendly orientation toward yourself and others. The 2011 review by Stefan Hoffman, Paul Grossman, and Devin Hinton in Clinical Psychology Review was the field-defining paper that argued LKM and compassion meditation deserve to be studied as their own thing, distinct from mindfulness, with their own profile of effects. Increases in positive emotion, decreases in negative emotion, and specific applications for self-criticism, anger, interpersonal conflict, and caregiver burnout. The most rigorous comparison to date is the resource project led by Tanya Singer at the Max Planck Institute. Across nearly a year of training, participants were randomly cycled through 3 9-month modules: a presence module focused on attention and mindfulness, an effect module focused on loving-kindness, compassion, and partnered care exercises, and a perspective module focused on cognitive understanding of others' minds. Different modules produced different changes in self-report, in behavior, and in measurable cortical thickness on brain scans. In short, mindfulness training and compassion training are not the same thing. They train different capacities, with different neural and behavioral signatures. If you want a more loving life, you need to train love specifically, not just attention. Mood, depression, and anxiety. The most consistent finding in the LKM literature is that the practice reliably increases positive emotion. The 2014 meta-analysis by Galanti and colleagues in the Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology reviewed 22 studies of kindness-based meditation and concluded that the practice produces meaningful improvements in well-being and reductions in depression, with the strongest effects for daily positive emotion. A 2015 meta-analysis by Zeng and colleagues focused specifically on positive effect found a moderate average effect across studies. For depression, anxiety, and stress, the broader meditation literature, including the influential 2014 meta-analysis published in JAMA Internal Medicine by Goyle and colleagues, shows small to moderate effects roughly comparable to those of established psychological treatments. The Goyle review focused on mindfulness, but the LKM-specific evidence points in the same direction. A particularly clean 2015 randomized trial by Shahar and colleagues showed that an LKM program produced significant reductions in self-criticism and depressive symptoms, and significant increases in self-compassion and positive emotions, in self-critical individuals, gains that were maintained at 3-month follow-up. For post-traumatic stress disorder, The most striking result so far is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. A pilot study by Kiani and colleagues in 2013 showed reductions in PTSD and depression symptoms in veterans after a 12-week LKM program, with gains maintained at 3-month follow-up. A follow-up randomized trial in 2021 reported that loving-kindness meditation was non-inferior to cognitive processing therapy, one of the gold standard PTSD treatments for veterans with combat-related trauma. Non-inferior to a gold standard therapy is a high bar for any intervention, and unusual for a contemplative one. Positive emotions build real resources. The most influential single study of LKM is Open Hearts Build Lives, by Barbara Fredrickson and colleagues, published in 2008. Working adults were randomly assigned to either a 7-week LKM workshop or a waiting list. Over the course of the study, the LKM group showed measurable daily increases in positive emotions. Those increases in positive emotions, in turn, predicted increases in resources, mindfulness, sense of purpose, social support, and reductions in physical illness symptoms. The increases in resources, in turn, predicted increases in life satisfaction and reductions in depressive symptoms. This is what Fredrickson calls the broaden and build effect. Positive emotions broaden your moment-to-moment cognitive and behavioral repertoire, and over time those broader repertoires build lasting psychological, social, and even physical resources. Loving-kindness practice is one of the most direct ways we know to step onto that upward spiral on purpose. A later study by Koch, Fredrickson, and colleagues in psychological science showed that an LKM intervention produced measurable increases in vagal tone, a marker of parasympathetic nervous system function and physical resilience, and that this effect was mediated by increased perceptions of positive social connection. In plain English, practicing loving-kindness made people feel more socially connected, and that increased social connection actually changed how their bodies responded to stress at the level of heart rate variability. The exact effect sizes here have been debated, and you should treat the magnitude with appropriate caution. The direction is well supported. A surprisingly small dose has effects. One of the more practical findings is that loving-kindness practice does not require monastic commitment to produce measurable effects. In a now classic 2008 study, Hutcherson, Sapolla, and Gross showed that a single 7-minute guided loving-kindness induction with people who had no prior meditation experience was enough to increase explicit and implicit positive feelings toward strangers, compared to a matched control exercise. 7 minutes. With strangers. With no prior practice. Short-term compassion training has also been shown to increase actual prosocial behavior in laboratory economic games, not just self-reported feelings. You don't have to take the full course to see results. You just have to start. Compassion changes the brain. The neuroscience is some of the most striking evidence in this whole literature. Long-term Buddhist meditators with thousands of hours of compassion practice show different neural responses to others' distress, with greater activation in brain regions associated with affiliation, empathic concern, and emotional engagement. The deeper question, whether compassion training causes such changes in ordinary people, rather than merely correlating with them, was answered by a remarkable 2014 study by Olga Klemecki, Suzanne Leiberg, the Buddhist monk Matthew Ricard, and Tanya Singer. The Klemecki team did something unusually clean. They first trained novices in empathy, feeling what others feel, including their pain, and watched their brains. Empathy training, they found, increased negative effect and activated the pain-related insular and anterior cingulate cortex. Then the same novices were trained in compassion, warm, caring concern for someone who is suffering, without taking on their pain as your own. Compassion training produced the opposite pattern, increased positive effect, and activation of a different network, ventral striatum, pregenual anterior cingulate, medial orbitofrontal cortex, associated with affiliation and reward. Compassion, in other words, is not the same thing as empathy. Empathy alone, sustained over time, burns people out. Compassion is empathy plus a warm, caring response, and it is sustainable. It is what allows nurses, parents, and ordinary people to stay open to suffering without collapsing under it. This finding alone reframes a lot of what gets called compassion fatigue. What burns caregivers out is not too much compassion. It is empathic distress, sharing pain without the warm, affiliative response. Training in metta, in the explicit cultivation of warm goodwill, is one of the most direct ways we know to inoculate yourself against this kind of burnout. A 2013 study by Helen Wang and colleagues at Richard Davidson's lab put this in concrete terms. 2 weeks of online compassion training, compared to a matched cognitive reappraisal control, increased people's willingness to give their own money to a victim in an economic game, and changed brain activation patterns in regions associated with social cognition and emotion regulation. 2 weeks. Online. Loving kindness reduces implicit bias. One of the most socially consequential findings comes from a 2014 study by Yuna Kang, Jeremy Gray, and John DeVideo in the Journal of Experimental Psychology, General. 6 weeks of loving-kindness practice, but not loving-kindness discussion alone, or a wait list, produced measurable decreases in implicit bias against stigmatized outgroups, in this case, Black Americans and homeless people, as measured by the implicit association test. Practice changed something that talk alone did not. This is a notable result for a few reasons. Implicit bias is hard to move. Most laboratory interventions that try to reduce it produce small or temporary effects. And the result, while small, has been replicated in shorter form studies. What this suggests, very practically, is that the love everyone part of meta practice is not just an aspiration. It actually shifts the way you respond, below conscious awareness, to people who are different from you. It does what the Sutters claimed it would do. Inflammation, cortisol, and cellular aging. The body-level findings are more tentative, but worth knowing. Pace and colleagues at Emory found that the amount of compassion meditation practice, in a study of college students learning cognitively-based compassion training, predicted attenuated inflammatory and subjective distress responses to a standard laboratory stressor, though it should be noted that the original randomized comparison did not reach statistical significance, and the dose-response effect emerged in secondary analyses. Treat this as suggestive rather than settled. A small but striking 2013 study by Hogan colleagues found that women with at least 4 years of daily LKM practice had measurably longer telomeres, the protective caps on chromosomes that shorten with chronic stress and aging, than matched non-meditators. This is a cross-sectional comparison, not a causal study, and the sample is small. But it points in the same direction as broader research on stress, well-being, and cellular aging. The honest summary, there is converging, biologically plausible evidence that durable contemplative practice is associated with a less inflamed, less stressed, more resilient physiology. The exact magnitude of these effects is debated, and the most extreme claims you'll find in popular science writing are not well supported. But the general direction is real. Self-compassion, specifically. Closely related to meta is the work on self-compassion by Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer. Self-compassion, treating yourself with the kindness you would naturally extend to a friend who was struggling, has been shown across dozens of studies to be associated with lower rates of depression, anxiety, and stress, and with greater well-being. The 2012 meta-analysis by Mack. Beth and Gumley found a large negative association, correlation around -0.54, between self-compassion and aggregate psychopathology across 20 studies. The Mindful Self-Compassion, Master of Science, program developed by Neff and Germer has been shown in randomized trials to increase self-compassion and well-being, and to decrease depression, anxiety, and stress. This matters because traditional metta practice, since at least the 5th century commentaries of Buddhaghosa, has begun with cultivating loving-kindness for oneself. The contemporary evidence on self-compassion confirms what the older texts already taught, that loving the self is not selfish, that it is the foundation of loving anyone else, and that doing it well produces measurable mental health benefits. Cautions, failures, and honest limits. A book that overstates the science loses credibility. Here is what's important to flag honestly. First, adverse effects are more common than popular accounts suggest, and they deserve to be taken seriously. The 2017 Varieties of Contemplative Experience study by Lindahl, Britton, and colleagues at Brown documented over 50 distinct types of meditation-related challenges in long-term Western Buddhist practitioners' affective, cognitive, perceptual, somatic, and social. A 2021 study by Britton's group, using a structured interview administered after standard 8-week mindfulness-based programs, found that 83% of participants reported at least one meditation-related side effect, roughly 58% experienced at least one effect with a negative emotional valence, about 37% experienced an effect that had a negative impact on day-to-day functioning, and lasting bad effects with significant functional impact occurred in 6% to 14% of participants. These rates are broadly comparable to those reported for other psychological treatments, and the great majority of effects are mild and transient. But they are not negligible, and for people with serious trauma histories, untreated PTSD, dissociative disorders, or psychosis spectrum vulnerability, contemplative practice, including LKM, can sometimes intensify rather than relieve symptoms. A trauma-informed approach matters. Appendix B addresses this in more detail. Second, for self-critical or trauma-affected practitioners, send loving-kindness to yourself can paradoxically intensify shame, grief, or numbness. This is sometimes called backdraft, in analogy with the way a fire flares when you suddenly let oxygen in. It is normal, it is workable, and it does not mean the practice doesn't suit you. But it does mean the practice should sometimes be modified, for example, by starting with a benefactor or pet rather than yourself, by keeping sessions very short at first, and by giving yourself explicit permission to stop. Appendix B has more on trauma-sensitive adaptations. Third, the field has had its share of overclaims. A famous 2005 paper by Fredrickson and Losada proposed a precise mathematical positivity ratio of 2.9 to 1 as the threshold for human flourishing. The mathematical derivation was decisively refuted in a 2013 critique by Brown, Sokol, and Friedman, and Fredrickson partially retracted that specific claim. Don't take any specific number you may have read in popular psychology too literally. The broad claim that positive emotions broaden cognition and build resources survives. The specific 2.9 ratio does not. Fourth, the polyvagal theory of Stephen Porges is enormously influential in trauma and meditation circles, and you'll see it cited in books that mention vagal tone. Some of its core anatomical claims have been challenged by physiologists, and you should treat polyvagal-specific claims as plausible but contested. The broader, well-supported claim that the vagus nerve and parasympathetic regulation are involved in emotional well-being and social engagement does not depend on the polyvagal theory specifics being right. Fifth, be cautious with oxytocin claims. It is common to read that loving-kindness practice releases the bonding hormone oxytocin, which then makes you closer to others. The actual oxytocin literature is much messier than this. Many widely publicized findings have failed to replicate, and the effects are highly context-dependent. You can practice metta with full confidence. You should not claim the mechanism is oxytocin without significant qualification. Sixth, the broader meditation literature has methodological weaknesses. The 2018 Mind the Hype paper by Van Dam and colleagues is the standard summary of these concerns: small samples, weak controls, conceptual confusion about what counts as meditation, and substantial publication bias. The honest framing for a serious reader is that loving-kindness and compassion meditation have good but imperfect scientific support, that the converging evidence is strong enough to warrant taking the practice seriously, and that the field as a whole would benefit from larger, pre-registered, well-controlled trials. What the evidence adds up to. If you set the contested specifics aside and look at the picture as a whole, what comes through is this. LKM and compassion practice reliably increase positive emotion, perceived social connection, and self-compassion. They reduce self-criticism, depression, and anxiety in non-trivial ways. They produce measurable changes in actual pro-social behavior, in implicit bias, and in physiological markers of stress and resilience. Compassion and empathy are dissociable in the brain. Compassion training builds the warm, sustainable response and helps protect caregivers from burnout. A surprisingly small dose has measurable effects. Even 7 minutes can shift social connection measures. Adverse effects are real but manageable, especially with trauma-aware adaptations. 2,500 years of contemplative tradition said that durable cultivation of loving-kindness leads to better sleep, a calmer mind, deeper concentration, easier relationships, less ill will, and a heart that grows steadily larger. The contemporary scientific record confirms it. Every one of these claims is now supported by published, peer-reviewed evidence. The practitioners didn't need a laboratory to know it worked, and we don't need one either. But we have one now, and what it shows is unambiguous. The lens is real. It can be trained. The training pays off in measurable terms across mood, biology, behavior, and the quality of ordinary days. And the cost of skipping the practice is higher than most people realize, because most people never had the chance to compare a year with it to a year without. The next part of this book is about how to actually do it.